Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It is Friday, Pauhana Friday, end of the week. What a week it has been. I forgot to turn off that little bell sound here, from which you can tell we've got the chat room running. The webcam is back up and running today, just barely. It's been another nightmare morning trying to deal with all of this Microsoft Windows stuff. We'll be talking about that later on in the show. I got so many emails after yesterday's rant from people who are saying this Microsoft ruined my company with their thing and all these problems. Windows 7 is starting to turn into another giant systems joke like Vista was. There's some wonderful video out there. We're going to be talking about that. But I want to start here at the top with some more important, serious news, and that, of course, has to do with the situation in Iran. Now, as you know, early in this week, there was this announcement about, you know, these meetings. In Austria, one of the British representatives got thrown off the top of the building, apparently to try and derail the meeting. That didn't happen. They went forward. Russia and France and the United States put a proposal on the table for Iran, and we're going around saying they have to agree to it by Friday or there'll be heck to pay and all the rest of this good stuff. And that Friday deadline was not actually formalized. It wasn't really, nobody at the United Nations said it. It was not actually real. It was something that was in the media to try and bring pressure on Iran to simply go along with this first proposal, which includes, I'm given to understand, basically saying that Iran renounces its rights under the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, which is a big sticking point. And I want to mention, this is the kind of negotiating tactic that you will see from the United States and also from Israel. You go into a meeting and saying, look, we're going to go in, we're going to have peace talks, we're going to have nuclear talks, we're going to have talks about whatever. And then you go in there with a negotiating position that is absolutely unacceptable. You know, your leader must come over and kiss my leader's ass on national television kind of thing. And then when the other side says, I can't agree to this, then the U.S. or Israel walk out of the meeting and say, look, we were negotiating in good faith. They won't go along with it. They're the bad people. So anyway, what Iran actually said, okay, what Iran actually said is we want a couple of days to look at this, and we have some counter proposals, which is how these deals get made. One side says we suggest this, the other side says we suggest this, and you go back and forth. The American corporate media, and certainly the Jerusalem Post, are attempting to spin the fact that a deal was not struck today as Iran completely rejecting the whole process. They're trying to sell you this idea that the deal is off, which is, of course, what Israel and the U.S. desperately need for this deal to fall apart. But you need to pay very, very close attention. Remember, Israel and the UN, they're cornered politically and publicly. They need a war with Iran. They're so desperate for one, they can taste it. I don't know what war tastes like, but that's what they're tasting right now. And so they want this deal to fall apart any way that they can, including throwing members of the negotiating team off the top of buildings. But all Iran has said is, we need a couple of days to look at this. That's all they've said. Nobody has rejected anything. Nobody has refused anything. Meanwhile, Israel's out there screaming, saying, Iran is refusing to fully disclose, and blah, 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 which is kind of amazing because it's Israel that was asked by both the U.S. and the United Nations this last year to sign the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty and allow the same IAEA inspections of their nuclear facilities that Iran currently allows. So it's the ultimate of double standard and hypocrisy for Israel to be out there screaming about Iran's refusing to meet its international obligations, which is Israel speak for they're not doing what we tell them to do. But that's basically what's going on here. And they're coming out with these headlines about hour of decision on Iran if they don't go for it. I don't know. Maybe the U.S. and Israel are going to nuke the place over the weekend because of this imaginary Friday deadline. Okay? But there was no actual deadline set by the United Nations, by the IAEA, by anybody. It was just something that Al-Baradei said it might happen by Friday, and everybody took that and ran with it. It's just another way to try and put pressure on Iran. Iran doesn't respond to pressure very well, and I understand that. I don't either. People put pressure on me. I tend to go the direction other than what they want me to go on. And Iran pretty much does the same. Iran's position is very reasonable. We want a couple of days to think about this. You know, it's a very complex document. They have to think about what are the ramifications relative to their getting their peaceful nuclear needs met. their own internal laws and what are going to be the political fallout ramifications of going along with this deal internally. There's a lot of people in Iran that want the Iranian government to tell the U.S. and Israel to go stuff it. And so any compromise is going to be seen as political weakness. And Ahmadinejad's opponents, you know, the ones getting all that money from the U.S. government, they are probably going to seize on the signing of a deal. So Ahmadinejad, if you think about from where he's sitting, this is a darned if you do and darned if you don't situation. If he doesn't come to some kind of an agreement, the U.S. and Israel will declare war. If he comes to an agreement, the opposition parties inside Iran that are funded by the U.S. and Israel will declare war. Not exactly an easy position. I don't blame him for wanting a couple of days to think this through. I certainly would want a couple of days and a good bottle of scotch, and I know Ahmadinejad doesn't drink, but that's I'd want to take some time and think this thing through here. Meanwhile, final warning, if you will, Russia reiterated its pledge to continue its arms supplies to Iran. Russia is continuing to send conventional military equipment and supplies, advanced anti-aircraft missiles to Tehran. Russia wants to avoid a war. We all do. The only people who want wars are Tel Aviv and Washington, D.C., everybody else thinks it's a really dumb idea. And how desperate they are to get it, because we were talking earlier in the week about Israel and the U.S. being cornered. Very interesting situation. Zbigniew Brzezinski, major player, power broker, was on TV being interviewed and basically started talking about a defensive war with Iran. In other words, they're looking for a way, again, to make it look like Iran attacks us first, which basically, as I read it, they're going to stage an attack to blame on Iran. Somebody will probably do it, probably Israel again. They'll knock down some more buildings, or they'll blow up a base, or they'll do something. And they say, oh, gosh in heaven, we have got evidence from these people we just tortured that Iran did it. We have to go, we have to destroy their country to save our own lives. It's the same scam they pulled with Iraq. It's the same scam Hitler pulled with Poland. Fool me once. Okay, they're coming up here for like number three, number four. They're getting ready to try it again. And you know what's insulting? And you should be insulted. They think you're stupid enough to fall for it. That is what is really insulting. They actually think you are so dumb after seeing what happened in Iraq that you're just going to go right along and fall for it in Iran. That's the situation. Now, real quick. Alex Jones' new movie, Fall of the Republic, is out. It is actually available to view online in a lot of different places. You can go to Prison Planet TV, and you can watch it entirely there. You can buy the DVD, so forth and so on. And you know, Alex Jones, his goal here is to get the stuff out, and he says, you know, download it, copy it, give it copies to your friends, and so forth and so on. And so it is up on the website, a couple of different places you can look at it. What's interesting, though, it's already drawing quite a bit of reaction and quite a bit of buzz. It's been reviewed by a couple of newspapers who said some very good things about it. But interestingly enough, for a short while earlier today, the last time I checked, they had stopped doing this, apparently because of the negative press, but Facebook had labeled the video, Follow the Republic, abusive, and was blocking links. If you tried to use a share it on your Facebook page, you would get a block message saying, this video has been reported to Facebook as abusive. Well, I don't even know what that term means. It's like, you know, we're beating up on the altar boys or something. But they're basically trying to find some way that they can block it. The Obama files, if you will, are just having, you know, they're having kittens about, you know, oh, they're saying bad things. They're just a bunch of racists, and they're saying bad things about our president. Just because he broke all of his campaign promises is no reason to be so critical of him. Yeah, it is. Okay, let's be honest about that. So, you know, it's out there. Get a chance to see it. I'll be very honest. I think it runs a little too long. I think it wears people out. Looking at it myself, I think probably one more pass through the editing suite to tighten up the focus probably would have made it a better picture, but that's just me. Anyway, so. All right, let's turn on to this situation here with the computers because, as you know, yesterday, our webcam was not working. I lost a, as of right, oh my goodness, I've lost the end of the segment. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to be talking about computers, Microsoft, Windows 7, some severe embarrassments out there, And this is your opportunity to call in 866-582-9933 and just let us know how Microsoft has destroyed your life. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Call Mike now at 866-582-9933. 866-582-9933.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Now, if you tuned in yesterday and were unable to see the webcam, during the first part of the show, I launched into a little bit of a frustrated tirade over the state of our computer systems. And I basically, the summation of it was that we Americans are spending so much time constantly fixing and repairing our computers because of all the software problems in them that we don't have time left over to actually do productive work that we can make money with. When I'm sitting here fixing Windows, that's not billable time. I can't bill my clients for that. That's loss for me. It's money for Windows, money for Microsoft. Paul Allen gets to go out and buy another huge yacht. But it's not productive time. And if we're wondering why the United States all of a sudden is unable to compete with other countries around the world, it's because we've become trapped by the complexities, gratuitous complexities, of our own tools. So anyway, it all began when there was this component called the Net Framework, which is yet another in the endless levels of abstractions that software developers are required to deal with when they work with the Windows environment. And let me stop here and basically say I'm not a total neophyte. I got some nasty emails from some of the Windows lovers out there saying, well, you're just, you know, well, I don't need to go into that. I can't say this sort of language on the radio anyway. But basically, I have been working with computers in one form or another for a very, very long time. I built a computer out of phone relays that could play tic-tac-toe when I was in high school. That's a long time ago. I started with punch cards. Okay? If you programmed with punch cards in Fortran G, that's the vintage I come from. And I'm sorry, I've grown up with a lot of machines. I've written in assembler language. I had one of the very first Apple IIs. I had one of the very first Commodore 64s. I was a developer for the Amiga. And I grew up on Unix/Linux. When I do code development for my business now, I do it on a Linux system, which is a lot more straightforward than trying to write for Windows. I have tried to write code for Windows. It is a nightmare. It is 20 times as complicated, I feel, as it needs to be to develop the same code on Unix and X Windows. So that being said, I am not a neophyte with this stuff. So anyway, Windows, as you know, has this automatic update feature, which even if you turn it off, it'll still turn on. And all of a sudden, I started getting this constant attempt to reload a new Net Framework update. And I go out on Google, and yes, it's a known problem. It's a known problem, and we're working to fix it. And the solution to get away from this is to completely uninstall the entire Net Framework, which is 8 separate installed packages, clean out all the dreck from the installation, clean out all the directories and everything. This is from Microsoft itself. And then reinstall each one step by step through 8 installation packages to get back to where you are, which is what I did for most of yesterday, non-billable time. webcam quit working. Turned out there was a known issue between its software and the new net update. After the show went out to Microsoft, found that there was in fact an updated driver for the live cam. It just wasn't available through the automatic updates. You had to hunt it down. So I got that in there. We got the webcam running. Then this morning, I turn on the machine, and the first warning sign I get is a little box that says, completing installation. And I'm thinking, of what? What are you installing that I don't know about? And sure enough, it comes up, and along with all the net framework, it's installed all these search, this Windows search thing, which I had disconnected before, and all this indexing stuff that is constantly going on and just soaking up CPU power. I'm sorry, I need that CPU to do work that I get paid for. And I'm trying to turn it all off to sort of get control of my own machine back again, and it goes in, and I'm saying, can I just delete this? And it says, no, if you delete this, all the stuff you installed yesterday will stop working. I don't know why Net Framework requires Windows Search to be present to work properly, but I'm not kidding, that's the message I got. So just going around and around in circles. So I went off on this tirade yesterday, because I'm tired of spending all my time working gratis for Microsoft's quality assurance department. And I got a ton of emails from people saying, yes, it is insane. I remember when computers were simple and you did real work with the computers that actually you would go out and you'd make money with. And now it seems like we're spending all our time dealing with this. We had a caller calling yesterday talking about how he had a shop with AutoCAD that when they had a mandated upgrade from Microsoft, it paralyzed their entire shop. I got other emails from people saying they lost their company, they lost their business when there was an update to something with Microsoft that completely hosed what they were trying to do, and incompatibility and the software that they needed to do their job wouldn't work anymore because of a conflict, blah, blah, blah. Endless just pain and suffering out there caused by this. And as I said yesterday, the problem is the fledgling computer industry bought themselves some lobbyists and got the Congress to pass laws, similar to the ones we're now seeing for vaccine makers, to basically preserve and protect the fledgling computer industry from product liability lawsuits. And maybe at the time, that was valid because it was a new fledgling industry. But now it's one of the biggest industries we've got, and it doesn't need protection from product liability anymore. In fact, if we could get product liability back for the computer industry, I think they'd start spending a lot less time worrying about fitting in yet another piece of advertising into the interface and start going back and fixing all of these problems that are in these operating systems and applications that has just made trying to get anything done on these computers a very painful, costly, and unproductive exercise. It's like King Sisyphus. I'm constantly pushing this operating system up a hill only to have it roll back down on me. So I was actually not really paying attention to the fact that Windows 7 is launching at this particular time, and it's coming out there. Apple has already gone out there, and they understand Microsoft's weak point. They've come out with a new series of ads between Mr. PC and Mr. Mac. And they've got, trust me, this time it's going to be different. It is a funny, funny, funny commercial. It says, Windows 7 is out, and you're not going to have any of the problems my last operating system had. Trust me. And then they do a cut, and it says, Windows Vista is out, and it's not going to have any of the problems my last operating system. Then they do another cut, Windows XP, back through ME, and all the way back, and PC's clothing gets more retro and retro until he's back there in the 60s. And it's funny to watch, because that's exactly the situation. Every time Microsoft decides they want to come out with a new version of the operating system so they can sell you more product, we're always told it's going to be better than the last one, and it's always crap. And we will work with the operating system for years and years and years and service packs and all the rest of this stuff. And just at the time we finally start getting the bugs out of it, they say, okay, we're sunsetting that one. Now that it all works and we can't sell you any more patches and fixes, we're going to trash it and start all over again with a brand-new released, bug-ridden, completely messed-up operating system. Microsoft knows when these things go to the store. They have thousands and thousands of documented but not yet fixed bugs. And you, the user, being forced to work for free as Microsoft's quality assurance testers, are going to find thousands and thousands more of them. That's why Microsoft is so rich and you are so poor. They fired all their product testers. They've drafted you to find the problems in their product and report them in and do their job for them instead of doing the job you're trying to do for yourself and your own company. And that's what's going on. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about John McCain is out there battling net neutrality. This is a guy who, by his own admission, can't even use computers. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We got a caller on the line, Dan in Mississippi. Aloha, Dan. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Hello, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. What's on your mind?
How old are you? Imagine your age, and you know, you talk about it like, you know, you're an old geezer or something. How old are you?
Well, I'm approaching geezerhood. I'm basically mid curmudgeon phase right now. I'm a little shy of 60. I'm a little shy of 60.
Huh?
I said I'm a little shy of 60, but that's classified information.
Oh, okay, okay. I'm 53 myself, and I was
You whippersnapper, you. You
yeah.
brash
yeah, I was raised
kid.
In upstate New York, and so, you know, I did the Woodstock thing because it was just a few miles away from my house and everything. But
I remember the Summer of Love followed by the Autumn of Crabs.
Wasn't that sloppy? I mean, honest to God. I mean, my mission on Mescaline was to go ahead and gather sandwiches. That was my mission.
Man.
But anyway, just do away with the .NET framework. Just to be done with it.
I was looking at that, but you know,
yeah.
I kept seeing all these things saying that if you delete the entire .NET framework, that all kinds of the newer stuff is just going to quit working. And
well,
that's kind of my biggest gripe is that it all seems to be so interconnected. And, you know,
yes,
of course, it may just be
way,
that with the launch of Windows 7, they're just sending out things to mess up XP as fast as they can.
Yeah, I run XP Pro on my machines, and I haven't had a bit of problem out of, .NET. And I don't do any programming like I used to, but do you?
Well, not on Windows anymore. My brief flirtation with Windows programming happened about a year and a half ago. I'd say 99% of what I need to do, I can do on a Linux system with one hand tied behind my back.
Excellent.
Yeah.
What version of Windows are you using? Red Hat?
I'm using SUSE Linux
Dora?
On my Linux. SUSE. S-U-S-E.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I tried to use Ubuntu, but the graphics drivers wouldn't work properly.
Okay. Well, my suggestion just is delete the .NET framework from your system machines that you're working your program with, and you'll be amazed. All of a sudden, your webcam will come up, and everything will be hunky-dory.
Okay, well, I did get the webcam up and everything. It's just, you know, reading the Microsoft web pages, it seems to imply that the system won't work without the .NET framework. And so I'm going to look. Well, okay, all right. I'm going to look into that because if I can take that out, I am. I'm not writing code for the Windows machines anymore. So, but thank you for
exactly.
the advice.
Unless you do programming or you're, you know, use it for mapping or anything like that, you know. It might be necessary, but no, I deleted it. I have no problem.
Okay, well, good for you, and I will look into that because, you know, this one machine is kind of, you know, it's my day-to-day business machine, and, you know, I don't want to go to Vista. I've got a Vista machine. It's off in the side. I hardly ever use it, and so forth and so on. Anyway, listen, I got to let you go because we're running out of time here, but thank you very much for the advice. I'm going to look in to see if I can just delete this .NET framework. You know, it is amazing how junked up these machines get. Dan, thank you very much for the call, and please call in again. All right, anyway, we're going to finish up here on the Windows 7 thing here. If you go to whatreallyhappened.com, there's a video down toward the bottom now because we had a lot of stuff on today. It is a video from a live Japanese TV show. In Japan, they still do live broadcast TV, like they used to do in the early days here in the United States. Very, very popular. And they were doing a demo of Windows 7. and they couldn't get it to work. They'd go from one application to the next, and the scrolling wouldn't work, and it was locking up and freezing, and they're laughing and they're chattering in Japanese, and they can't get it to work. And it's a live show. They can't cut away. And Ryan Dawson was kind enough to basically listen to the tape and email me, and he says, what they're actually saying on the track is that another TV station that they were aware of had the same problems when they were trying to do Windows 7 and they couldn't get it to work either. So it's off to a very inauspicious start. What I am hearing from non-Microsoft people who have gotten Windows 7 so far, at least in the beta cut, they're saying basically it is very slow and kludgy. It is much, much slower than XP. It's loaded up with more of these arcane little things that run in there that soak up your CPU time. And they said the biggest thing is it does appear to be just Vista with a new branding on it. And you remember after Vista came out and it was this complete disaster, Microsoft ran these commercials about their new operating system, Mojave, and they were showing it to people and everybody was going, oh, that's wonderful, where can I buy it? And they said, that's not Mojave, that's really Vista. See, it's not as bad as you've heard. And, of course, anybody who actually had worked with Vista would have recognized it immediately as being that. And at that time, a lot of people were saying, you know, are they getting ready to, like, maybe repackage Vista and try and sell it again rather than write off all of that investment? And that may be a big part of what is behind Windows 7, because Microsoft is saying it's simpler and faster and better. That's not what we're seeing. It's much more complex. It's top-heavy. It's bloated. It's bloatware, same, so forth and so on. All right, listen, I got to rush here because we got so much to cover today, and we're already through two-thirds of the first hour here. Getting on to the economy, we have hit the point now where people who have been on unemployment are running off the end of their benefit. And we're going to see something like 200,000 jobless Americans will see their unemployment insurance checks stop in October. And what the government is going to do is, remember, if they're not collecting unemployment checks, they're not counted as unemployed anymore. And so in next month, we're going to hear somebody in the government say the unemployment fell by 200,000 in October. They didn't get jobs. They've just run out of money. They've run out of their unemployment insurance. And nobody's doing anything about bringing the jobs back. They're looting the country to give to the banks so the banks can buy up all the real estate at fire sale prices. They're looting the country is what's going on. I'm not the only person who's saying it right now. Now, Michael Moore, we don't always see eye to eye. But, you know, I certainly want to see his new movie that's out there. I haven't had a chance to see that yet. He's come out with 15 things every American can do right now. One of the items, he points to the state-run bank of North Dakota. Now, North Dakota has their own owned bank that operates very much like the constitutional model that this country was started with. It is publicly owned. The money is put into circulation for the use of the general public without owing the central bank interest for the use of the money, like we do with the Federal Reserve, like we did with the first central bank of the U.S. and the second central bank of the U.S., all of which brought this country to the edge of ruin before people stood up and said, enough, the bankers have made enough money off of us, enough is enough, let's go to a different model. So I don't always agree with Michael Moore on a lot of stuff, but on this one, he is absolutely correct. It is time to get away from the Federal Reserve, to shut it down. Again, for the third time, go back to the economy that the founding fathers created for us, because that worked for the common people and the common good. It worked to make the United States one of the richest, most productive nations on earth. Then we got the Federal Reserve, and here we are almost 100 years later, rampant unemployment, rampant poverty. We have the third greatest disparity between rich and poor in the world. Because of the Federal Reserve, it is time for it to go here. Now, Professor Chusarovsky had a video. We've got it linked to the front of whatreallyhappened.com. The title, the headline, is this, how the bank bailout money is being used. And he goes through step by step showing how all that taxpayer money that was given to Wall Street was not used to fix the economic crisis. In fact, it's going to make it worse. Basically, the private banks, private investment firms that are getting all this taxpayer money are using it to buy government assets, public roads, parklands, all that stuff, which they're going to turn around and charge you to use. This is your property. I'm not even sure the government legally has the right to sell it to the banks. But the banks are buying it. And then they're going to charge you for using what used to be yours. Because the government sold it to them. You ought to be furious for that. This is your country. They're selling your country out from under you. Piece by piece by piece by piece. Only you can stop it. We'll be right back.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our last segment of hour number one. And by the way, for those of you who follow along, my lovely wife Claire will be joining us in hour two. She wants to talk about some of the stuff that's been going on over in Pakistan. Finishing up here, we're just getting word the 100th bank has been closed this year. I think we have now closed something like four times as many banks in 2009 as we did in 2008. I'm not sure, I'll have to double check that, but that's what I think we're doing right now. Meanwhile, the Democrats, who are in control of the Congress and in control of the White House, and everything that goes wrong, it's their fault. Okay, they're now looking at raising the debt limit to above $13 trillion. I remember back in the 1990s, there was a state resolution making the rounds called the Ultimatum Resolution that said when the U.S. government debt went over $6 trillion, the federal government would be dissolved. And they were unable to get the three-quarter states necessary to vote the thing through. But that's how serious they thought the problem was back then. We've gone way past that. $13 trillion in government, direct government debt, and that does not cover the trillions and trillions, some estimated $27, $28 trillion that they basically borrowed to throw onto Wall Street. Now, it's getting harder and harder to find countries willing to buy dollars, willing to buy U.S. debt. And so more and more what this has really come down to is the Federal Reserve is just printing it up and giving it to the government to spend. And it's like legalized counterfeiting. But, of course, this affects you because it makes the dollars you are holding in your hands worth less. And that is that's the enslavement of a government fiat currency. Now, when the United States was started, the money was silver and gold. The dollar was defined as a weight measure of silver. That's where the word dollar comes from. It's a unit measure of silver from the Thaler mines of Germany. And the German mines would cast their silver into disks of identical size and weight that were so uniform they became accepted as standard units of exchange throughout Europe and the New World, and became the basis for the Spanish mill dollar, the piece of eight, the American dollar. They all trace their roots back to the German Thaler. So when the United States was started, we had fair and honest money. It was silver or the equivalent value of gold. That was what the money actually was. The paper notes were just claim checks. They were a convenience. You could take those paper notes to the bank or the treasury at any time and draw the actual worth in silver or gold. And the value never changed because it was legally defined. $1 is so many grains of silver. $1 is so many grains of gold. It never, ever changed. And once you had that gold and silver in your hands, whether it was from the United States or Germany or even ancient Rome, the coins from ancient Rome held their value and were used as money long after Rome itself was gone, because the money had inherent worth. And it didn't matter what the sponsoring government did, including going completely out of business, because the money had worth. Then we got this central bank, and they said, you know something, we can just go on printing up paper notes and we don't have to back them with anything. And that's when silver certificates stopped being silver certificates and became Federal Reserve notes. And the notes, instead of being a claim check for money, became the money itself. And once they did that, the value of the money you're holding that you've already earned became subject to the control of the banks and the government, mostly the banks. And they can make your money go up in value, or, and this is what they tend to do 99.9999% of the time, they make it go down in value. because that's how they get richer. Because we're all agreeing to use these Federal Reserve notes, and they can just print them up as much as they need, hand them out for bonuses, and the who pays for it is you, because your dollars are worth less and less and less. Your dollar today is worth a tiny, tiny fraction of what it was back before the Federal Reserve came along. And if you don't believe me, go down to a coin store with your paper Federal Reserve notes and buy a silver dollar, a U.S. silver dollar. Don't get a shiny, clean one, you know, where its numismatic value is there. Get an old beat-up, cruddy one that you're buying just for the silver content. See how many of those paper dollars it takes to buy that American U.S. silver dollar that used to be the legal tender in this country. And you will see how much your money has been debased in order to make the bankers richer. So that's what's going on there. So anyway, the Democrats are basically, they're saying we got to raise the debt limit, which what that means is because they can't find anybody else to loan them any money, and we're not able to conquer anybody and steal their money anymore, the Federal Reserve will just print it up, give it to the government will spend it and put it into circulation, and when you have too much money chasing around too few goods and services, prices will go up. This is why oil just hit $80 a barrel again, even though demand is still low. We haven't gotten into the winter months with fuel oil purchases. People aren't driving as much. They don't have anything to drive to. There's no jobs to drive to. Tourism is down. Demand is down. And yet the price is going up. The price of everything is going up because the dollars are being debased to keep the bankers richer and the politicians happier. And they don't care what happens to you because they're not afraid of you. They can drive you down into absolute grinding poverty where you're eating mud just to survive, and they won't care. Because they're not afraid of you. They don't think you can do anything to them that they have to worry about. So the Democrats are going to boost the debt limit yet again. They're probably going to tack it onto a military appropriations bill so they can say, look, we didn't want to raise the debt ceiling, but we needed to get money to our troops because they're in harm's way. Okay, guys, I know how to get the troops out of harm's way without spending $13 trillion to do it. Bring them home. We don't have any reason to be in Iraq. They didn't have nuclear weapons. They weren't helping al-Qaeda. They had nothing to do with 9/11. Bring our kids home. Give Iraq back to the Iraqi people. We don't have any reason to be in Afghanistan. Osama bin Laden is dead. Give Afghanistan back to the Afghani people. Bring our kids home. We have problems to fix in this country. We don't have the money, let alone the support from the people, to go around the world fixing everybody else's problems. It just doesn't work that way. All right, coming to the end of the show, I had so much to talk about here. Israel, of course, is continuing to just prove to the world how absolutely unrepentant they are about the war crimes committed in Gaza. Ehud Olmert is actually on a speaking tour here in the United States. You want to talk about chutzpah. And apparently has been very surprised by the fact that everywhere he goes, he's being heckled and protested and yelled at. And apparently this is catching him by shock. I guess he assumed that since they had given orders to the U.S. government to make sure that only nice, pleasant people were ever allowed near him, that he was going to have a nice little vacation here in the U.S. It's not working out. We've got video from San Francisco where Olmert was being heckled, and he deserves it. Actually, he should be in The Hague. He should be in The Hague facing war crimes trials. They're trying to work on that. Meanwhile, of course, Avigdor Lieberman is basically called Ban Ki-moon directly at the United Nations and say, look, you stop this Goldstone report. Don't let it go any further. It's creating a culture of adverse publicity for Israel at the United Nations. We can't allow that to happen. Okay? And, you know, it's just prejudicial. This Goldstone report is prejudicing the world against Israel. Yeah! This is like Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, going to trial and saying, look, can we, like, not talk about the cannibalism because it's going to bias the jury against me? Yeah. If you didn't want to have that bias and animosity, don't commit the crime. It's like that song. Don't do the crime if you can't do the time. Israel, for 60 years, because of the United States protection, has been able to commit any crime they want and get away with it. Get out of jail free card. And neither the U.S. or Israel seem to comprehend that the rest of the United Nations are fed up. They've had it. They want it to stop. Mostly because, as the United Nations pushes forward on a global government on the basis of this global warming crap, the U.N.'s own credibility is on the line here. Ban Ki-moon might want to help Israel, but if he does, he cuts the UN's throat regarding a global government. The same thing with the General Assembly. You know, Israel and the U.S. are already in the General Assembly lobbying people. No, you can't vote for this. You can't vote for Resolution 377. We're going to kill it in the Security Council. You have to kill it here. You got to do this. And the General Assembly understands if they do that, if they knuckle under, it destroys the credibility of the United Nations and the global government. By going open and publicly saying, please stop this, Israel has created a political climate that makes it impossible for the UN to block the Goldstone Report without destroying the push for global government. We're going to take a break for news and commercials. We'll be back in about 7 minutes with my lovely wife, Claire, sitting in seat number 2. And stay tuned. Aloha, America.